Conor McPherson, regarded as one of Ireland's most significant living playwrights, is the author of The Weir, The Seafarer, St Nicholas and The Good Thief, all of which have been presented locally in recent years. Now comes the small theatrical troupe Thunderclap Productions with the regional premiere of McPherson's very first play, Rum and Vodka, dating from 1992. It's a monologue delivered by a 20-something Irish alcoholic who's having trouble dealing with the increasing responsibilities of adulthood. A boring full-time job with a government agency, his relationship with his wife, the party girl who got pregnant as a result of their little fling a few years earlier, the fathering of two young daughters, a house and a mortgage, and the fact that he's not really ready to grow up yet. Andy Ingalls plays the man in Thunderclap Productions' staging of Rum and Vodka. Justin Doran directed. They discussed the play with our producer, Bob Stevenson.
Andy and Justin, thanks for talking with us on the front row.
Hi.
Thanks for having us, Bob.
Andy, we have your character who seems compelled to tell us what has been happening in his life over the past 3 days. Why is it you think that he feels this need to share all this stuff with us?
Well, I think it's been a long time coming, actually, that he's been drinking a lot. He's come to some conclusions about the direction of his life, and that direction being mostly downward. Mm-hmm. And the scales have tipped over these last 3 days, and he's gone a bit down the river. It starts with him throwing his computer terminal out the window, and the dominoes start to fall. And I think once we get to the end of the dominoes falling, he has to try to.
This is a computer terminal at work.
Which, yes.
Which, as far as he knows, means that he's not working there anymore.
As far as he knows.
Although he hasn't been back to find out, really.
No, he hasn't.
He's a little scared to go back.
A bit worried about that. But I think that he sees how much he has lost over these last 3 days. And telling the story seems to me a sort of way to appraise all of this, or to see what it was within that was of value to him, or what can be.
Yeah, I let me chime in and say that I also think that he's 24 and he is wearing big boy shoes for the first time. Mm. He's got his first job. He has two children. There's a very poignant line in the play that resonates with me where he says he owns his own home and he's there for the first time and he realizes he can do anything that he wants to do. And the newness of that lasts about 24 hours until he realizes this is as good as it's going to get. Essentially, that this is what he will be doing for the next 40 years, is that he will be working in the tax office or the voter registration office. Mm-hmm. And supporting his family. And I think he just was forced into growing up a little quicker than he had anticipated with a surprise pregnancy and then a planned second pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And the responsibility catches up with him. And what he used to be just going out and having a quick escape after work turns into something that is starting to rule his life with the drink.
Keeps up. Billowing bigger and bigger on him until it's pretty much out of control.
He makes some poor choices.
A few poor choices. And each one, I think each one of them is meant to be a better choice than the last one. And they're going quite the opposite direction after a while. He thinks, I can make up for this. I can fix this. I need to get away from this. This other direction, this other woman, this other life, this other group of people, this other drink will be what fixes, what cures, what solves this. And going in that direction only leads him home.
He's Irish, so we,
yes, sir.
So we assume he drinks some, but... he seems to have a bigger problem than a lot of people.
I think so.
Through the course of this 3-day experience that he describes, he's pretty much on a bender and is either lying on the floor or throwing up most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So this has gone way beyond just having a pint or two now mm-hmm. and again.
It has. It's gone beyond, you know, standard alcoholism. He's a functioning alcoholic. I mean, he can go about his business most of the time, and he has for a couple of years mm-hmm. gone about his daily life and nightly life with a drink in his hand or with three or four in his belly. And one of the first things he talks about is how much his wife and he have been fighting about this thing. He's not coming into one or two every morning, not, you know, paying attention to all the money he's spending on drinks. And, you know, this has been going on for about a year. There's a question, of course, of how long he can keep this up.
It's like when you direct a play, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much money you're spending, coming home at 2 in the morning, you're fighting with your wife, how long can you keep this up? Yeah, it's very much like that. Yes. Yeah.
We'll talk about these other adjectives some other time.
I'm writing my own one person, Joe, right? Yeah.
Well, the other thing I found myself puzzling about as he relates what's been happening lately and all along in his life is that you reach the point where, you know, he's gotten angry at work and thrown the computer out the window and lost himself his job right there and that. Yeah. He's drinking way too much. The guy's a loser.
Yes.
At least that's the opinion that you first form of him, which somehow causes you to wonder why he seems to have such good luck in hooking up with beautiful nymphomaniac women.
It is a good question.
Because the woman he's married to is a party girl that he hooked up with, and she turned up pregnant when he was dating this other wonderful woman. And then in the course of this weekend, he hooks up with another young, beautiful, highly sexed woman.
Yes. Well, no, I don't think that's a tremendous mystery. And I only I only say
tell
that.
Us about this.
Yes, please.
I only say that because he, I mean, in many ways, he is danger in a person, and the women can see that. Some of them may want to cure him, like he asked Mifanoi to do. They may want to fix him, and that's a, you know, it's a tall
this
order.
This is the girl he hooks up
with. I don't think she really wants to. I think she may just get off on, you know, him being really dangerous and really bizarre. And, you know, who does that? Who comes up to a girl in the bar and screams at her over the music and the noise, "Cure my life! I want you to cure my life!" All of that. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I think that she finds that, oh my gosh, I've never done this before. This is an adventure, and
turns her on a little bit.
It turns her on a little bit. I think, okay. You know, I think she's a wealthy girl who goes slumming, and you know, he's the one she goes slumming with. And frankly, there's never really any talk about whether Maria, his wife, is very attractive or not. He meets her at a party. He's already hammered. The lines are, you know, I was getting sick in her shoe, and then for whatever reason I kept seeing her after that, and it's because, I mean, part of it is because she was so easy, and then stay with her because everyone else was giving you so much, such an awful time about it that, and she was the only one who didn't criticize me, so there's never really any discussion of, am I attracted to my wife? Sure, she likes to be in bed a lot, and we go to bed all the time, and that's great. But am I really attracted to her? No, I miss my girlfriend, who I, you know, dumped 4 years ago.
He does speak wistfully about this woman he was dating when he hooked up with Maria, who became his wife.
Yeah,
he knows at a certain point that he is gonna leave the girl, as much fun as he's been having with her since they've been having sex every couple of hours, that he is going to go home again. Mm-hmm. And he does realize and recognize that.
It looms over him very much. He doesn't have anywhere else to go. I mean, he's not going to go back to Phil and Declan. I mean, he knows that they're there.
These two losers that he used to work with.
Yeah, and
totally lost his job.
They have these grand plans of starting a landscape company. Living in the outdoors. It's not answering to the man.
Uh-huh. No more fluorescent lights or instant coffee. None of that.
Right.
No more drinking either. But he's not going to go back to them. He knows that it looms over the whole second act. That at the beginning of the second act, he says, "I could go home now and make it up to her. I could go, I don't know how, but I would. I'm going to sacrifice all my free time. I'm going to do whatever it takes." And then, you know, every drink puts him a little bit farther away from that. But it's a constant return in the play. It's intermittent, and every few minutes he has this little taste of homesickness in the first act, and in the second act something that he's just so repulsed by what he is in, these people that he's around, that there's something at home for him and he doesn't know what it is and he's afraid of it, certainly. But he also knows, I just need to put it off a little bit longer. I just need to stay here. I just need to stay with her and with this glass or with this bottle for a little while longer, and that'll make it better.
Well, it's true, we don't know where it's going, but no. There does seem to be some element of hope that...
Yeah, hope.
Maybe he has now hit bottom and that the only direction after that is up.
Agreed.
Justin Doran and Andy Ingalls, thanks for talking with us on The Front Row.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Bob.
Andy Ingalls performs in Thunderclap Productions' staging of Conor McPherson's Rum and Vodka, directed by Justin Doran. There are two performances, tomorrow evening and Saturday at 7:30 at the Wildfish Theatre in the Shopping Plaza at the corner of Post Oak Boulevard and San Felipe. Tickets will be available at the door. They can be reserved in advance by calling 800-494-8497 or by logging on to the Thunderclap website, and you'll find a link to that at thefrontrow.org.